This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Dustin Hoffman and Anna Hastert.
Welcome to another edition of Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman. Anna Hastert will be joining us in just a little bit. Let's take a look at everything that kind of went down this week. It was kind of a busy week for us. Starting off, went to the Wiffles Corn Strategies meeting earlier this week in Worthington, Minnesota. Anna and Jenna got to go and visit with Vice President Mike Pence, or actually go see him, in Ankeny. Jenna also got to go to an ostrich farm. We had lots of things going on as well here throughout the week. Of course, the big thing of the week was the next round of market facilitation payments have been authorized. Sign-up will begin Monday. That's this coming Monday, August 29th, and we'll be running through December 6th. Now, there is a few changes here. Single county payment rates will be multiplied by farms' total plantings of eligible crops in aggregate 2019. So it's not going to be based on each commodity individually. Now, there'll be a minimum payment of $15 per acre, up to a maximum of $150 per acre. Now, before you get all excited about that, Iowa right now looks to get about an average payment of about $66 per acre. Now, of course, that'll be more or less depending on your situation. Looks like the southern states will be getting more of the payments because they grow a lot more pecans, walnuts, pistachios, more of those specialty crops, which are going to get a little more money, and that's going to factor into those different payments. Now, more information is going to be coming as this rolls out. They're hoping to see the first round of payments start to come out as early as mid-August, maybe late August. But again, sign-up starts on July 29th. Maybe hard to believe it, we're less than 2 weeks away from the Iowa State Fair here in Des Moines. We'll be out at the cattle barns near the Super Bowl. That's where you'll be able to find us all 10 days of the fair. Anna Hastert had a chance to visit with the folks at the Iowa State Fair. Let's listen in.
The 2019 Iowa State Fair is a little over a week away. It's 11 days away if you're listening on Saturday, and 10 days away if you're listening on Sunday. It's hard to believe that this event will soon be upon us. The Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network will be attending all 11 days of the fair. You can catch us right outside of the cattle barns on the south end of the fairgrounds. We encourage all to visit us, but if you're an e-newsletter subscriber or interested in subscribing to our e-newsletter, we have a gift for you. We'll also be handing out sunscreen to make sure that you have a safe and enjoyable 2019 Iowa State Fair. I recently spoke with Gary Slater, CEO of the Iowa State Fair. Gary speaks to agriculture's role in the early years of the Iowa State Fair.
And I don't know if the State Fair concept started in Iowa, but the Iowa State Fair started in 1854, and it was first year was in Fairfield, Iowa. And the concept was that the state of Iowa would offer a premium to producers of livestock and crops so that they would have more money to invest in breeding stock and buying seed corn or seed beans or whatever that would be better varieties so that we could improve our agricultural output or product along the way. So those premium dollars, even though they were small, they really helped foster and then the spirit of competition that we all love as a part of that just became the tradition in Iowa State Fair and Iowa agriculture. And so over the years, obviously, it has grown to something that we think is one of the best traditions, because without the agricultural component of the Iowa State Fair, we would just be one big festival. And not only that it is the biggest industry in Iowa is agriculture, it certainly is a tradition that we all know and love. And Iowa ag education is a big part of the Iowa State Fair.
As you know, the agriculture industry is always evolving, and so is agriculture's role at the State Fair. Gary speaks to a couple of new events people can expect to see or attend at the 2019 Iowa State Fair.
Of course, we have all of the regular competitions in swine and sheep and dairy, beef cattle, and all of the rest of them. Some of the interesting and new ones this year, we have a livestock show in the swine department. We put together one called Bacon Buddies. But we have 4-H and FFA students that are physically challenged, and they can't get out and show an animal. So We have put together a show on the first Saturday of the Iowa State Fair called Bacon Buddies, where we're actually helping our young people who are physically challenged show livestock. And I think this will be something that is pioneering in the show industry and one that I'm just really, really proud of because it started from the grassroots and came to my office. And I just was thrilled to endorse it and let it go ahead.
Yeah, and another new activity that you guys have this year that's also spearheaded by the younger generation is Have You Heard? Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Have You Heard is an area of telling people exactly how we prepare our livestock to come to the Iowa State Fair and get in the show ring. Why we do certain things to let the general public who are not on-farm folks that are suburban, urban cousins understand why we trim hooves and why we trim the animal's hair, what we do to prepare them for the show ring of the Iowa State Fair, which includes working with them before you come and taming them down and getting them comfortable with the show atmosphere.
And last but not least, more information on how to make the most out of your 2019 Iowa State Fair visit.
Well, I think the first thing is go to our website and look at all of the different things that there are to see and do, because you can't do it all in one day. Really, you probably couldn't do it all in 11 days if you came every day because there's so much going on. But our advanced tickets are on sale there. You can buy them. Save the $4 per person per day by buying those in advance. If you have kids and grandkids that want to participate in the midway, there is a savings there by buying advanced wristbands for the carnival. Think about how you want to come to the fair. If you're able to use our park and ride, that might be a good alternative to come and maybe fighting the hassles of parking here on the ground. First thing I would do is download our app, because it has a schedule function there and you can look through the events and then you can make your own schedule, and that'll keep you on time when you get to come to the Iowa State Fair. The big thing is just come hungry, because we have lots of great foods, over 50 new foods at the fair this year.
Once again, we'll have a booth at the Iowa State Fair. We'll be there all 11 days from 9 a.m. to roughly sundown. You can catch us right outside the cattle barn. I'm Anna Hostert reporting. Stay tuned for more news and market information.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
Every day, more farmers and ranchers choose to work with us because they know we work for them. We're Farm Credit Services of America, dedicated to serving the financial needs of rural America and those who live within it. More than a source of financing, we are a source of ag financial expertise with management tools, loan services, and risk management plans that can help grow and protect your business. Learn more about Farm Credit Services of America. Agriculture works here.
Everyone has their Iowa State Fair favorites. For families, it's camping at the fairgrounds. For some, it's the accordion playing contest. What's your Iowa State Fair favorite?
Oh, spending time with family. And there are plenty of ways that we do that. Watching the kids enjoy little hands on the farm, soaring above the fair on the sky glider, strolling through the art exhibits and the jams and jellies, browsing in the VI building for tattoos. Ooh, a grandstand show and fireworks. Then we start thinking about what we'll do tomorrow. Maybe watch the talent show, grab a lemonade, spin art, maybe take in a horse show.
Nothing compares to enjoying a full day or week of fair favorites at the Iowa State Fair, August 8th through the 18th in Des Moines. Visit iowastatefair.org for details.
Riding the giant slide, helping with the sew-in, checking out the flowers, trying some goat yoga.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Last weekend, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of one of the greatest achievements in the history of man.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We've come a long way in the 50 years since then, especially in agriculture. On Tuesday, I was up in Worthington, Minnesota for the WIFL's Corn Strategy Meetings. There, I got to hear a talk by Dr. Lowell Catlett of New Mexico State University. If you've never had a chance to hear Dr. Catlett speak, he's quite an advocate for agriculture, but always has his mind on the technology of the future and looking back as to where we came from. And that's what he did earlier this week. He took us back into where agriculture has come from, since Neil Armstrong walked on the moon.
We're celebrating right now the Apollo moon landing. And if you're a baby boomer, who's a baby boomer and can remember watching Neil Armstrong? Okay, there's just a few of you. Quite an accomplishment. Okay? Phenomenal. But let me frame that 50 years for you real quickly, because there's only a handful of us that remember watching Neil land on the moon. Okay. 1969, there were 200 million Americans, 50 million households when Neil walked on the moon. Today, there's 330 million Americans, 126 million households. More than double the number of households, not quite double the population. Okay. 1969, ladies and gentlemen, one-fourth of all those households, one-fourth, didn't have a phone. The phone we got on the ranch I grew up in, the Panhandle, Texas, had 17 people on a party line. One-fourth of all households didn't have a phone. Today, ladies and gentlemen, 330 million Americans, on average, we all have two. I can't keep track of one. You got two. 85% of them are, quote, smart, meaning they're the equivalent of a computer. They're equivalent of a computer 20 million times more powerful than the Apollo computer that took them to the moon. My God, folks, in 1969, 10%, one out of every 10 of you, didn't have flush toilets. When Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, the most phenomenal accomplishment of any nation ever, fully one out of every 10 Americans didn't even have a flush toilet. That isn't that far away, ladies and gentlemen. What's interesting, too, 1969, the average car, those of you that raised your hands, you remember when they walked on the moon, you remember the car of 1969? That car of 1969, sitting still, dead in the parking lot, emitted more harmful things to the environment than the average car today driving down the road at 65 miles an hour. You go, that can't be. It's dead. It's not doing anything. And a car at 65 is doing, well, folks, you remember the car of 1969? It didn't have captive return on the gas tank. So those fumes were doing what? We just started self-service, so most of us had long since left the gas cap on a gas pump somewhere. So we didn't even have the cap that it came with. We had a red shop rag sticking out of the filler tube. In 1969, the average American spent 15% of their income to eat, and they got to eat a meal away from home once every 2 weeks. Today, the average American spends less than 10% of their income on food, and you eat every other meal away from home. Do not tell me, agriculture, that that doesn't change the phenomenal growth in restaurants has done what? Change the face of agriculture simply because you don't spend any money on it. We've doubled the population in the world, but at the same time, guess what? We're now a little over 7.5 billion people, and for every man, woman, and child available, there's now 3,200 calories. You need 2,450. Guess what, folks? We fed a hungry world. Agriculture did it. Thank you very much. And they did it in the time that Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. Phenomenal, okay? But here's the interesting thing. You know how you did it? I'll use the example of corn. You're here for WIFL's, okay? Corn alone, 1969, when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, what was the average yield in the United States on corn? Approximately 75 bushels to the acre. What is it today? 175. Wait a minute, folks. 2.5 times more corn is being produced in this country than when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon on fewer acres. Oh, by the way, for our friends in animal agriculture, guess what's happened in the last 50 years? The efficiency of pounds produced in beef and every other thing, pigs, chickens, gone up by 50%. I do not use PowerPoint. This is up, this is down, 50% with a 25% reduction in the amount of inputs used to do it. So you did the corn and all other crops on fewer acres, and you did all the production of animal agriculture to eat that meat with 25% fewer resources and 50% increase in output. God almighty, this powerful thing called agriculture. It's what we've always needed, but get ready, folks. Okay, we feed 330 million Americans better than anybody, another 250 million, and all the while, guess what else you feed? You feed fully another 95 million head of cattle. You produce all the food for them, 75 million pigs, 10 billion laying hens and chickens for meat, 10 billion of those, 90 million turkeys, 500,000 bison. When Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, we struggled to identify 50,000 bison, both in Canada and the United States, because we had decimated them. Now they're a half a million and a meat source. 9 million sheep and goats you feed every year. 300,000 llamas and alpacas. We farm 40 million quail, pheasants, grouses, and woodchucks to hunt. You farm those. That's not counting the ones in the wild. You farm those. You got to feed them. 10 million horses. Only 1 million of them work. The other 9 million don't do jack. 2 million donkeys and mules. We got 500 zoos in America. You feed 1.5 million zoo animals every year. There's another 1,900 sanctuaries for animals where we feed at least another 1.5 million animals of all kinds. You do that in agriculture every year. So you provide the supplemental feed and habitat, you, in agriculture, for 30 million deer. When Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, we estimated there were 15 million deer in America. That's doubled since he walked on the moon. 1 million elk, 300,000 moose, 400,000 caribous, 300 million ducks and waterfowl, many of them on your farms and land. And I guarantee you those 5 million Canadian geese regularly light somewhere up in here and munch out, don't they? You provide the supplemental feed and habitat for all of those and untold others in this circle of life. That's powerful. Nobody runs those numbers. Nobody talks to you about the power of this agriculture. We just talk about feeding a hungry world. Get over it. We've already done it. You've done it. And you do it for all these other animals, too. On less land so that they have the habitat to do all of that. And that staggers the imagination. Never been done in any other country on the planet. And oh, by the way, when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, we only had 20 million dogs in America. Estimated 25 million cats. Today we estimate that there's at least 90 million dogs and 86 million cats. When you don't think about it and you don't reference it, we've come a long way. And we're feeding more people better than at any time in history and providing habitat for animals and a diversity of animals that we've never known before. It's just simply phenomenal. Agriculture, ladies and gentlemen, isn't just about feeding a hungry world. We've done it. It's about feeding all the creatures on this world and doing it with scientific agriculture. You're just as much a part of feeding a hungry world in different ways as you are in this new world about the ecological movement and about the environment. And, as I just tried to tell you, it's just as important for human health as well. That's what you did in agriculture. Let me leave you, though, with the fourth man to walk on the moon, Alan Bean. When Alan Bean came back after Apollo 12 in November of 1969, someone said, "How was it?" And he said this, "Well, I don't complain about the weather anymore. I'm happy to feel the wind on my face. I don't complain about the traffic anymore because I'm just happy to be around humans and activity. In fact," he said, "I don't understand why humans complain about anything because we live in a Garden of Eden, agriculture. It's what the world needs now more than ever. It feeds us, it feeds our dogs, it feeds our deer, and it enriches the world that we live in. And we're going to pay you for it. Thank you for being part of it.
That's Dr. Lowell Catlett from New Mexico State University here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after this.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. This week, Ken Root is joining us to talk about communicating with our ancestors. Now, it's not as spooky as it sounds. It might even touch your heart if you ever wished you could talk to a departed loved one.
Standing along a fence line and looking at the posts that connect the wire, I imagine the lineage of people who came here before and will be here after I'm gone. Within living memory, I look back at my ancestry and would love to talk with them again to appreciate their wisdom and to hear their stories. I would also like to connect with a few on what I should do, how I should deal with my current challenges of life. Their era is gone. Their heritage is established, but mine is still at risk, and I'd love to have their counsel on so many things I face in life. The wisdom of our parents is seldom appreciated during their lifetime. We, as children, are self-absorbed. We deal with our emotional and physical growth while parents keep us safe and guide us toward maturity. It is natural to rebel, sometimes for no good reason. That leads to separation from family and dissolution of a common household, which is usually good for all parties. But later on, when we realize our parents' wisdom and determination, they are often a shell of their former selves or gone to the grave. When we want to talk seriously with them, they are no longer there. I'm not morbid about this, but cemetery talks have value. They often come just after a relative is departed, but some are regular pilgrimages of respect and reflection. You can't change the past, has been said to me by so many, that I now say it to myself and inflict it on others. But the past is from whence we came, and examining its moments often helps me face the future with a bit more confidence and dignity. In the 1980s, my family took a multi-day cemetery tour that routed us back through our ancestry. It was a van loaded with my mother and father, my brother and sister, with my sister's daughter, my niece, and me. I had never met any of the people below these tombstones, so there was no sorrow, just curiosity. Dad would chime in with stories passed down to him about a grandfather or great uncle. Then my brother, whose wife had done a lot of family genealogy, would chime in with some of his historical details of children and even relocation of the grave from one cemetery to another. It was validation that my DNA had moved to me through the lives of people who faced great hardship and experienced events I can only imagine. Some were people of short horizons, and others were men and women of great vision. One night during the trip, I dreamed that each appeared and sat with us for a while just to talk about their lives. They were barely literate, the norm for their age, and they kept their history in their heads, passing it on in oral fashion to their children. But as stated, those children were often too absorbed in their lives to value the lessons and legends until the storyteller was gone. I envision that real people should be preserved and replayed on video in the distant future. The problem with such a scenario, however, is that no normal person sees themselves as a linchpin of history or as being deprived or exalted in their lifetime. As a result, when I put a camera on a 70-year-old man, he will tell me more about his parents and less about himself. Still, it's worth the effort to gain some insight into our roots, to understand our inner motivation and what connects us with the past, so that we can more carefully craft what we wish to send to the future. Many families keep posed photos of their ancestors back to the mid-19th century, but these tell little about any person in the picture. My parents' only wedding day picture shows my mother standing behind my father, who is smiling and sitting in a ladder-back chair outside their back door. Her hair is dark. Her smile is youthful. She pushes her hair back with her right hand, a nervous habit she'd have for her entire life. In most cases, it is not the physical demeanor of our relatives, but their larger presence in our lives that really draws us back to them. They were there for counsel and guidance that we rarely followed. They were there for comfort and compassion, which we rarely sought. They are now gone, as we find need for all those things that were offered, but not appreciated. I look again at the fence that runs long. The posts stand as singular sentinels. Only the land and wire connects them. We can only hope it transmits a kinship from one to the next. For Weekend Ag Matters, I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and that's going to put the wraps on Weekend Ag Matters. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network studios in Des Moines, we thank you for tuning in. As always, you can find all of our stories and content online at iowaagnet.com. We'll see you back here next weekend for another edition of Weekend Ag Matters.